The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompox, Bolivar, 6 hours south from Cartagena on the Colombian Caribbean coast. And this is episode 341 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest is Alexander Barrett. He's the CEO and founder of iFinca. Check it out on their website, iFinca.co, or the app, iFinca. And this is set, and they believe it, to revolutionize the coffee industry and the coffee market, because it allows you as the consumer in a cafe around the world to scan a QR code and find out who the cultivator, who the coffee grower was, who produced the beans that you are drinking now. So very interesting, and it allows you to see where the money went along that chain. So we'll be talking to Alexander Barrett about how he came around to create this app, why he's there in Medellin creating this app, and where he hopes to go with the app. And, you know, this will open up all sorts of pathways to other industries, but, you know, related to the iFinca model. Very exciting for those of us overseas who've tried to make a life of it, or are trying to make a life of it, and create new businesses and create sort of forward-thinking enterprises here, especially in Colombia. So very exciting. In a short moment, I'll be handing you over to the excellent newscast done by Emily Hart, a journalist from the UK, obviously a Colombianist in her own right, doing amazing things for this podcast, and I know that you appreciate it. Last week's show, 340, with Kyle Johnson, was incredibly popular because I think lots of you out there were just asking, why is this going on? As of Sunday night, Sunday the 6th of September, there have been 51 massacres in Colombia this year alone. 51. So everything is, unraveling, it seems, in the countryside. But of course, refer to our interview with Kyle Johnson if you wish to understand a little bit more about what's going on in the country. Prior to that, writer and academic Emma Louise Jay, holed up in rural Antioquia, she interviewed me as I was holed up here in my little quarantine area of Mompox. So that was very exciting as well. We've got some good people in the pipeline ahead of us for the coming weeks, and I might let you in on a secret, or I might not, at the end of the show, that we have someone very, very special lined up for a couple of weeks from now. In fact, I'm going to leave you hanging. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but we are in the final negotiations for someone incredibly well-known and worldly to be on the show. So very exciting times. I'm going to leave you now with Emily Hart, and then we'll be back with Alexander Barrett talking about iFinca. Thank you again for listening, and bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of September 6th, 2020. Columbia has now reached 21,000 coronavirus deaths and 650,000 cases, seeing a 3% mortality rate. The trend in new cases has, however, been consistently downwards since mid-August, and September will be a month of reopening for Colombia in attempts to get the economy moving again after nearly 6 months of quarantines and lockdowns nationwide. Schools are trialling reopenings in areas with low or zero COVID, with social distancing and masks as compulsory. Tension between local government and national decisions has added to the confusion around the reopening, but most students will likely finish the year still attending classes remotely. The city of Cali attempted to reboot its nightlife, piloting open-air parties, with compulsory masks and without alcoholic drinks. The experiment was called off after local business owners were unable to make a profit without the sale of alcohol. Getting Colombia back on its feet will not be an easy job. This week, the National Statistics Agency released figures on the economic state of the nation, revealing that over 85% of Colombians will not be able to afford basic products like food, clothes, and shoes in the next 12 months. During the course of the pandemic, 1.5 million families, nearly a quarter of homes in Colombia, passed from having 3 meals per day to only having 2. 10% of homes in Colombia now only have 1 meal per day. The economy as a whole contracted by more than 15% in the second trimester of the year, the worst trimester on record, destroying 150,000 jobs in July alone. The estimated total number of jobs lost due to the pandemic is around 5 million. Unemployment is now at over 20%, and it is estimated that it could take a decade for the economy to recover. Former President Álvaro Uribe remains under house arrest, facing 12 years in prison on charges of witness tampering and bribery. Last month, Uribe quit the Senate in hopes of having his case transferred from the Supreme Court to the prosecutor's office, which is under closer executive control due to its proximity with the ruling Centro Democrático party, of which Uribe himself is founder and was senator. The strategy was successful, and the transfer of the case is now in process. Iván Cepeda, the politician whom Uribe was allegedly trying to frame by tampering and bribing witnesses, has claimed the appointed prosecutors cannot decide the case due to a conflict of interest, being too closely allied to Uribe. Cepeda has launched an appeal, and a special prosecutor could be called in. Also this week, Colombia's president, Iván Duque, came under fire over his numerous attempts to erode democracy during the coronavirus crisis. International campaign Transparency International expressed concern over the concentration of power in Colombia's executive, as well as in irregularities in the use of public resources and decisions to direct aid to large companies during 2020. This year alone, Duque has declared 3 states of emergency, allowing the government to bypass Congress and remove local government powers. This concentration of power has been compounded by recent appointments to key watchdog institutions. The post of Attorney General, Human Rights Ombudsman, and Prosecutor General are now all held by close friends and allies of the president himself. Colombia's biggest unions have announced a reactivation of the paro, the social movement, street demonstrations, and general strikes which gained momentum in 2019. They are calling for mass mobilization on the 7th of September from 10 a.m. The strike has a range of demands, including basic income, better benefits, an end to ethnic discrimination, and an end to Duque's emergency decrees, which, it is felt, have negatively impacted workers in Colombia. That was the week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the third segment of Colombia Calling, episode 341. As you know, I'm here in Mompox, Bolivar. My very special guest this week is Alexander Barrett. He's the founder and the CEO of iThinker, quite a revolutionary app out there. He's in Medellin at the moment, and we're going to talk to him about this app. And, you know, basically, it's quite, I'd say, revolutionary in its style. So let me just say, Alexander, thank you so much for coming on the Colombia Calling podcast.
Buenos dias, Richard. ¿Cómo estás?
I'm very well, thank you, Alexander. Now, a little bit of your background. You're originally, I think, from California, but you sort of were working in D.C., and then you sold up everything, and now Medellin is your home.
Yes, that's correct. I grew up in the Napa Valley, so Northern California, the famous wine country. I did my second undergraduate degree at Pratt in New York, and then I moved back home. My father was ill, so I started to combine architecture and real estate company, and I was also at the same time a volunteer firefighter and EMT. Then I decided after 6 years it was time to leave the home base, and then I went back to D.C., and I got my executive MBA. Wow. When I finished that executive MBA, I was pretty burnt out. Remember, I was a volunteer firefighter. I owned a combined real estate architecture company. And then I had just finished being a partner and then doing my graduate degree. So I was literally burnt out. I became very interested in emerging markets. And one of the booming emerging markets right now in South America is obviously Colombia. So I said, let's head down here and take a look and do a little research on emerging markets. Let's not work 15 hours a day and let's try to learn a second language. And that's what brought me to Colombia.
Excellent. And of course, you landed in Medellin, and the rest is history. And you've been seduced by the, well, the startup environment there, and of course, the very, very comfortable climate, and of course, the way of life. You're not working 15 hours a day, although I think you probably are. But
yeah, I'm back at it.
out of various sort of adventures, this iFinca came into being. Tell us about this app and how it came about.
Well, it started because, as I just shared with you, that I moved down here. So one of the first things I did was, because of my passion for architecture, I was a bit of a search for colonial architecture in Colombia. If you've been down here, most of it's been unfortunately been destroyed in the big cities for, let's call it development. But if you go to these smaller coffee towns like Jardín, which was the first one I went to, they have that quintessential colonial architecture. And I had gone to Jardín for my second weekend here for a Spanish immersion class. There was three students and a professor. She was originally from Jardín. So, we went around. We did, things like scavenger hunts in Spanish and, talk to people. What's the local flower, flowers and what's the birds, things like that. Our third day, she took us to a finca, and she knew the family. So after the tour, the normal tour, and the rest of the tourists left, they had invited us to a traditional paisa lunch, and we sat down. And with her as my translator, the professor, I just asked some basic questions to the farmer, things about how do you set your prices, what's your margins. And basically, I walked away really confused because it just looked like they were price takers, and they were not connected to the supply chain at all. I thought that might be an outlier, but then as I visit more coffee towns and more in search for colonial architecture than this issue with coffee pricing crisis, I did go to more fincas, and finca after finca, it was the same story. So I came home and I started diving in deep, finding out, really about the coffee supply chain globally, and try to figure out why what I was hearing in the field, how is that relating to, consumers and being ethically sourced. And then that's how I think it came about.
So, coffee is something that's so dear to my heart, and I've got a huge pot of it here in front of me now. The idea then, over, I guess, hours and days of this investigation in these small colonial towns, beautiful colonial towns in the Antioquia region and around there, it was just like, let's do some ethical sourcing and let's bring that not only to the importer, the roaster, but also the consumer. And that's what you have on the app.
Yeah, correct. So I really did start with the farmer. That's where I saw the problem, a lack of connection. And there's what they call a pricing crisis within the global coffee industry right now. Basically, almost every farmer is receiving for his coffee below the cost of production. It's a huge problem. So I started with this. Imagine if you go to a trade deal for eight countries, right? And seven countries show up and the eighth one doesn't. Guess who's going to get the short end of the stick on that trade deal, right? That's what's been happening to farmers. They've been just leveraged by the big buyers for decades now. And they're not there negotiating. They're not an equal stakeholder. So the initial intention was, why don't build a mobile app that brings them to the table, right? Use technology. And then so many things have opened up since then. But one thing we can do with that is we can disclose a farm gate price on a global scale, meaning the farm gate price is what the farmer receives. And now this is extremely valuable to people like roasters, cafes, and consumers. So not only iFinca provides what we call full traceability, who the farmer is and where it came from, but what we call transparency. How was the farmer financially dealt with, or what did he receive? Now you can take that number and decide whether that, as a consumer or a cafe, if that aligns with your ethos, right? So with more information is better decision making.
I like it very much. And especially, I think, I think as a, let's say a global community in coffee, sort of say the coffee culture, certainly appeals to people, those of us who you know, go to artisanal cafes or specialty cafes. I go to a few in Bogota. There aren't any here in Mompos, unfortunately, but I go to these places and, you know, they're almost like WeWork outlets. You sit there for hours and you have your good coffee and you're with your computer and stuff. I think we're all at this situation where we want to know more about, and that the farmer themselves is benefiting appropriately for the, you know, the hard graft on their land and what they go through. And I think, of course, this is something that's been coming about for some years now. Obviously, I guess spearheaded places like San Francisco and Seattle and then, you know, across the world. But I would say in this sort of COVID that we're living in, COVID virus, COVID-19 virus time, that we're going to be even more aware. You know, this has brought a certain degree of humility to our society. And perhaps we're going to be, or perhaps people who weren't so aware and who are just buying coffee because are going to be more, I don't know, in tune with this. Maybe as a global community, we can come out of this a bit more altruistic. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree that this movement about knowing where you're in, not just coffee, but where your product comes from, but, you know, and especially things like food, you know, where is it coming from? And, you know, how was it handled? Who in the supply chain touched it? People want to know that. The technology is now, it's here. It's been here for a few years. And you'll see in different industries, people are doing things similar to what I think is doing, say, in, you know, maybe chocolate, traceability. But it's limited. As I say, it's kind of partial traceability. Kind of people can go back to regions, but because we've literally connected a farmer as an equal stakeholder, we can go all the way back to the farmer. But to get back to, every survey out there now is people, they want to know who the farmer is, where it came from, and was it ethically and financially sourced. Yes, it's capable and it's happening.
Well, I like this very much. Now, let's see. I like this very much, and I think this is important. And of course, you found this sort of sweet spot, let's say, for an app. Let's look at the app itself. I mean, very easy to use. I've got it on my phone now, and you've got the dashboard. It opens up. You've got the QR code scanner straight up. So first of all, if we start with that, I mean, everybody who's aligned or has signed up to your app, to iFinca, gets their own QR code. How do we know, how do we get a list of places that have signed up for this? I mean, sure they're all over the world, right?
Yeah. So let's take a step back. We wanted to make it for the consumer as frictionless as possible. So you don't even need to download the iFinca app as a consumer. If you do, there's many more benefits, which I'll get into. But you could literally use the camera on your iPhone just to scan the QR code to get the same information as if you had the mobile app. But if you download the mobile app, you've got, there's a section there that says, where's iFinca? And you hit that, and there's a global map with all the cafes and brands that currently have iFinca. And obviously, you can move around and go to your country and look. I think currently we're about 6 months into this process, and I think there's about 115 different cafes and 12 brands. So you'll see dots, you know, not numerous, but they're building quickly.
So yeah, I can see it now. I've got it open. Yeah, none in, well, one in Bogota, and way away from where I live. So I mean, we're going to have to build that.
Yes,
build that.
Of course, for six months. Give us some time.
Yeah, definitely. No, I like that very much. And there's a sort of element of the whole sort of social media style on these things. There's a coffee quest. And
yes,
you've got a leaderboard on there.
Yeah, Coffee Quest is a game we set up. So every time you scan a QR code, you get, say, a point. So then you can see your points or your scans versus everybody globally or by country or by state or by city. So it's a fun little game. Also, every time you scan a QR code, it documents it. So it shows you, there's a button that says your coffee journey. You can go back and say, see everywhere where you, every coffee shop and the QR code you scan and the farmers that were involved. And you go back and say, what was that, you know, bourbon I had from Colombia? at, you know, I don't know, Crazy Mocha in Pittsburgh. You can go back and take a look. You can also click on the farmers if you have the mobile app, and you can leave them a message on a message board. So maybe you and I and a group from Bogota leave messages, and it's not a text message, but more of a message board. And the farmer can reply back, hey, thank you guys. Appreciate you, you know, the kind words. So there's a direct connection between you and the farmer.
Well, I like that very much. I like the fact that I could be, let's say, having a coffee in London, and I can see there's a few in London, in my home city. There's the Blue Collar Specialty Coffee in Fulham, so again, not too hard to find. And I could send a message to the producer from there, to the grower. That's really cool. And then he would respond in kind, probably in Spanish, and just say, you know, how awesome this is. I like this very much. Now, what are we looking at here? I mean, you've come to Medellin. Medellin is, let's say, you know, it's been very well marketed as Silicon Valley style place for Colombia. So you set up in Medellin not only because it's a comfortable place. This is a company that has workers in Medellin, India, the US. I mean, it's a truly global brand, right?
Correct. Yeah, we've got a development team in India. We've got team in US. We've got team here, and we've got a few in Brazil right now. And yes, I did not know this was kind of a hub for technology, Medellin, when I first started this project. But obviously, I found out real quickly because there's some amazing resources here for startups. But you got to first be a what they call like an LLC or a SaaS here. Once you do that, The doors open up. There's a group called Ruta NA. All sorts of resources for free. It's amazing. And there's just a lot of great energy here when it comes to the technology.
Okay, so I mean, we see this, and the way through the transparency means that the cultivator, the coffee grower, is likely and most probably going to get or receive decent or hopefully a beneficial income on his coffee cultivation. It's going to go to specialty coffee places. I mean, I think you're onto a real winner here. And as you said, cacao or chocolate is looking at this as well. I think there's room for other let's say markets. So people must be sounding you out for this patent, Alexander.
Yeah, almost weekly I would get reached out to people up at the upper echelon, shall we say, the cannabis industry. I've been talking to government in California and an attorney that's been in that industry in California for 20 years. Cotton has reached out to us. Spices has reached out to us. Vanilla has reached out to us. Obviously, the World Federation of Cacao Chocolate, they've reached out to us. But right now, as I told you, we are going through some growing pains right now. We are just can't keep up with just in the coffee industry. So we're in the fundraising, just started fundraising Series A. And once we get some working capital, we need to bring at least two or three more people in the United States, four or five here in Colombia. So we can get some, we have the ability to grow the coffee sector, but then we've got people who already want, say, a licensing agreement to the platform. For the next one we will do probably is cacao. We're already in talks with NGOs and spices.
Nice. I like the spices one. So I imagine you'd have you'd grow immensely in a place like India and the exportations to Europe and the United States.
Yeah, so the gentleman that wants to kind of take the lead on this was working for IBM Food Trust, and he's very well connected in coffee, chocolate, cacao in the East. So we kind of interview. We've already had groups come to us and say, can we get a license agreement? We really want to make sure they're passionate about what they're doing. They got their resources, right? Because we don't want a black eye and I think, say, cacao to carry over to I think a coffee. So we got to find just the right people. I don't have the time to build in another two or three years to build relationships within another industry. So you got to find somebody who's already, well respected and well connected in, say, spices or cacao or tea.
So interesting. So interesting. Now, you see, I don't understand a lot of this stuff. Yeah, I'm not a techie. I can barely make my microphones work here. This is amazing that this is the new world. Well, it's not even a new world because we're in it already. How do you then make money off this?
Good question. We monetize it now. At least we think it's the best angle at this point. But now, because there's so many other options opening up and people want limited capabilities of the full capabilities we do. So let's just say they just need Meet the Farmer QR code stamp on their brand, but we'll get into that later. But on the traditional supply chain, we monetize it at the importer. So when the importer orders containers or multiple containers on the platform, then we charge a price per pound green to that importer. Obviously, the importer will pass that price to the roasters, depending on what country, and then they pass it on to the cafe, and then they pass it on to the consumer. And when it gets to the consumer, it's less than one penny per coffee drink for all the technology and the full traceability and transparency.
I think that's perfectly fair. Less than one penny is perfectly fair. I don't think anyone's going to complain about that. But the whole idea is that you inundate the market so you get some real income from that's really, really interesting. And then I have to ask you, because I know that some of my listeners out there will know this field far more than I. What do you do with all this data? Is there not this, you know, the words and the phrases that people use are data harvesting? Are you not selling the data?
No, we'll never sell the data. And the people who are only privy or who get to see all this data that we collect on what we call our coffee chain ledger, which is protected by blockchain technology, the only people who get to see that, there's an encrypted QR code that follows the coffee all the way from the farmer to the cafe. So you need the mobile app to be able to read this encrypted card, and not only have the mobile app, you have to be a buyer or seller of that specific lot. You could try to scan the QR code as an importer with the mobile app, but nothing will happen. And number two, we do a self-sovereignty identity for farmers. It's called SSI. This allows them to control their information. It's a new technology. And so no one really owns nobody owns the data on all that coffee that's collected throughout the whole supply chain. But we, in a sense, we kind of police it. But everyone who participates or buys and gets to buy and sell that coffee, they get to see that information.
Excellent. At this moment in time, so how many actual sort of coffee roasters, places to go and consume coffee do you have signed up? I mean, you must have, I would say, big chains or producers trying to get hold of the information to be able to sign up to your app.
So we're in talks with some of the larger players. Obviously, we're under NDAs on that. Right now, it's all kind of small to mid-size. I think I told you somewhere around 120 cafes globally. I remember about 6 months into it. A lot of people in the industry, the first adopters really understand it. One of the strategies for when we raise this capital, the Series A, is we're going to really now, we've built the platform, we've got people on the platform, coffee's moving on the platform, so now we can really push on the demand side for customer engagement. So that's their next strategy, hit the customer engagement, because they, at the end of the day, will really drive this. So you couldn't, we didn't want to start doing customer engagement until you really had everything up and operating. So what if they hit, they want a lot of coffee and you're not able to do it? I'd rather it be the other way around. So we're prepared, and kind of the doors are open now for consumers.
So definitely. So then you're going to expand massively. This is interesting. Growth expectations then. You've passed this 6 month mark. You need to employ more people.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Well, we did this because, as I told you, we monetize it on the at the importer level, right? So yeah. Obviously that's related to how many roasters and cafes. But we projected to be doing by the end of next year, like 100 containers per month. And a container is about 47,000 pounds. So I think that's being, conservative.
I think so, too. Of course, let's say that we're in the post-virus era next year. I don't know. I have my doubts about everything right now, but we're in this post-virus era. Well, the containers will increase, right? There'll be obviously more stringent rules on imports and exports and so on. But, I mean, coffee demand is at an all-time high, surely.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a low right now, but people about a month ago, most small to mid roasters have about 30 to 90 days inventory. Once they go through that and they're already signed up on the platform, that's once they get to that whatever their tipping point is, they want to do all, I think, a verified coffee. So we're in that. We're going to start looking. We and it works perfectly with our strategy because remember, we kind of had to build everything, test it. We're ready to go. We're going to bring on, so now a lot of customer engagement probably the winter of this year. So we're hoping that those inventories are out and spring of next year is when things will really kind of start getting back to normal because people are going to start needing coffee.
Yeah, definitely. Winter months, spring months.
Boys have coffee for almost 2 years. It's just the way they've got lots of contracts and stuff, but that's a whole different league.
But that's not your, I mean, that's, I wouldn't say at this point in time is your market. Obviously, it would be a great benefit to have some of these people on board, but I would say your market is more,
you know, it's all specialty coffee right now. But
specialty, yeah, exactly.
But this can work for commodities, but let's start somewhere first.
So in order to get, you know, the funds needed to you know, push into this next phase, the next 6 months, you're going to have to travel around all over the world and you'll be making those pitches, right? You'll be up there in the boardrooms of New York or obviously in Silicon Valley. This is the 15-hour days that you try to escape by coming to Medellin.
Exactly. So the initial intent was to the first year here in Colombia, and I was only supposed to stay here for a year, was not to work. It wasn't to party, but it was to, you know, do some research, learn a second language. But unfortunately, about halfway through this experiment, I started iFinca, and then obviously pretty quickly you're back to doing 15-hour days. But I absolutely love it, and I'm very passionate about it, and I'm having a great time actually. So it's
well, it sounds like it. I mean, you've got a certain infectious enthusiasm that comes across here, and I know that my listeners will appreciate that. The most interesting things for my listeners here is that, you know, so many of them have this desire to, you know, up sticks and I think especially now and start their own company, be their own boss and so on. And that's why people will tune into this episode more than others, is that entrepreneurial spirit that comes with, I think, moving overseas because you're looking for something else. But so you've brought your knowledge from elsewhere here, and you're, you know, it's a benefit to people on the ground. So therefore, we must applaud your efforts on this indeed. And it all came about from conversations in somewhere like Jardín Antioquia. I think that's the most inspirational part of this, is it's coming from the low level. It's coming from your very experience. It's not someone else coming to you. You've been on the ground talking to the cultivators, talking to the growers. And then you saw this opportunity. I mean, would you say that there's a lot to, you know, you could owe a lot to this by having done the executive MBA, or you are a person of this type who knows and can see these opportunities?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you, Richard. Yeah, the executive MBA was helpful. I'd already had successful, in a sense, businesses prior in real estate development and architecture. But the executive MBA, I think it really taught me what do you call each tool and where does it go in your toolbox, right? That's why I was successful. That's why that didn't work when I was doing marketing, you know, 15 years ago for real estate. So that it really kind of brought everything together. Also, things like when I was a volunteer firefighter in EMT, that was an extremely important part of my life of giving back, and I really was missing that when I had left. And I think this fills that void in a different way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, running into buildings or going on car accidents, there's a lot more adrenaline and excitement. But this giving back to, you know, there's 23 million global coffee farmers in the world. So the idea is one day we hope iFinca can touch them all. I mean, talk about giving back and being, you know, filling my heart with, you know, it's amazing. So I get my fix now by using technology to connect farmers to, you know, to the supply chains and at the end of the day, the consumer.
What I like about this is it's not an unrealistic plan. I like this. You know, I think one of the top YouTubers influential YouTube, influencer, I hate the word, but it's now one of those sort of farming families out in Colombia. It's not unrealistic that the farmers themselves are connected and have these phones and connected to a 4G network and actually can be talking and communicating with the buyers, the consumers, and so on. It's not 10 years ago, of course, this would have been completely an obsolete. It wouldn't have been possible in somewhere like rural Colombia. Now, of course, it is possible. So you're at the right place at the right time. And that's, of course, one of the key things for anything in this nature, the applications, the apps, and so on. Now, what's the end game? Because I know, a friend of a friend got in early with some, investors who then invested in apps and so on and walked away a millionaire. The end game for you is to sell on once you've got it to the position you want it, is to sell and then sort of, retire to Hawaii?
No, to Bogota. No, it depends on what happens here during the fundraising, right? Unfortunately, there's going to be a different strategy if it's still all held by me. Currently, I have about 97% of the company, or if you got mostly shareholders. They have different ideas of what they want with their investment, right? So, first of all, like I said, I want to be able to touch all global coffee farmers. That's my number one. But if it unfolds the way I see it unfolding, then we do a Series A and maybe a Series B of fundraising. I mean, you could basically go IPO, an IPO on this, right? That would be the normal strategy. It just depends on what strings are attached to this first round of money and how far we can get with it. The farther we go down Series A, B, C, D, now less control for me and more control for the investors. And typically they want the highest return possible. But I hope that at the same time we maintain the technology, because it is so powerful. You could actually leverage the farmers even more with this technology. And I want to avoid at all costs.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, this is your baby as well. So I want to know, and you won't be able to answer this as I wind down this conversation with you. Someone came up to you with the patent, saying, I want the patent, and what would be a figure that you couldn't turn down if someone came up to you and asked to buy the patent?
Oh, Lord. Oh. Right now, 100 million.
Nice. Now, how can I buy one share?
Because you can use this patent. It's patent pending, so we haven't got it yet. But it does protect the data storage and display on web and mobile applications for transparency and traceability, in a nutshell. If that is received here, that would be extremely defensive, and it would be very protective of the technology. Obviously, then the price value skyrockets.
Amazing. I love this. We talked to you when, and it was patent pending. We talked to you when, and of course, you'll be my topic of dinner conversations.
Contact when we receive the patent, or maybe a big deal with one of the big coffee people that will, give us recognition.
Excellent. Well, listen, congratulations, Alexander. This is really quite an upbeat story and a real story about making a success and making the most of it and bringing your knowledge and applying it. You've also, created jobs here in Colombia. There's a feel good around you, obviously, there in Medellin, because you've got this sort of know-how attitude towards it. So listen, thank you so much for agreeing to be here on the Colombia Calling podcast. And I recommend you guys out there look up iFinca. Alexander said, you don't need to download the app, but it's very friendly app. There's some out there that are just so difficult, not friendly to use. This is very clear. And that for me is the most important thing, especially someone, you know, mid-40s. you know, I think my kids would know it straight off. You know, they understand all this stuff. But, you know, I'd say this is amazing. I really like hearing these good news stories and these stories that it's a clear success already, 6 months in. So congratulations and thank you for talking to us and sharing your knowledge and sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you, Richard. Hope to be back with even more and bigger news.
Well, that's it. I mean, you'll have you back on in 6 months' time when you're $100 million richer, and I'll say, why didn't I buy, you know, half a share?
Why didn't I listen to Richard's podcast and follow
through? Why didn't I buy? And I know I have people who have small coffee production, and I have people who roast coffee who listen to this show out there all over the world. So hopefully, you know, I can drive you one or two. You know, I can have been somewhere in that line, in that production line. But I think it's really interesting, and I think there's definite room for growth in this market. And it's coffee, as I said, it's something that's very dear to myself. I can't function without it. So I think this has been a really, really upbeat episode of the Columbia Calling podcast. This episode 341. We've been talking about all sorts of things in the last few weeks, some political, some not political, but of course that's the world in which we're living here in Columbia. And of course Columbia is the lens for so much that we talk about here on the podcast, not just the subject itself. Next week we'll be back on episode 342 with another person talking about something Columbia related. I've got some historians in the pipeline who are going to address something interesting from the past here in Colombia. And of course we'll try and stay abreast of the news too, but it's always difficult to, you know, with a few days lead in and things changing so fast here, to keep up to speed. But anyway, let me say thank you so much to Alexander Barrett for his time and his unselfish conversation with us about what he's been doing, and I know he'll be an inspiration to many of you out there. So I've been Richard McCall here on the Columbia Calling podcast with Alexander Barrett. This has been episode 341. Always go to our Facebook page, our Twitter, and everything else, and you'll find all the relevant links to the people who we have had interviewed here on the show. So thank you for listening, and bye-bye.